Case is submitted, and we'll hear arguments next in Vance against Universal Amusement Company. Weiner, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, it may please the court. This case, Vance versus Universal Amusements Company, has had a very long, tortuous history, starting off with a number of separate cases in the state of Texas and some 20 of those cases being consolidated before one three-judge court. As a consequence, many issues got obscured, but I think that the issue that is presented today is clear, and that is whether or not there can be any prior restraint imposed in the First Amendment area. Can there be any? If procedures that protect First Amendment rights are adopted, can there then be the type of thing we have here, an injunction against the future showing of, in this case, obscene movies, even though those particular movies have never been judicially determined to be obscene?
Mr. Tweener, I may say so with all respect, it's a little difficult reading the briefs to discern what the issues are in this case. At least it was for me, perhaps because of my obtuseness. But in any event, may I ask you, do you concede that Article 4666 is not involved in this case now before us? And you do so because you concede the unconstitutionality of that article?
No, sir.
Well, I thought you did.
The appellee says that we concede it. We have said it has never been involved. Our briefs to the Fifth Circuit
argued. You say the holding of the court that this article is unconstitutional, and I'm quoting from your brief now, is not questioned by these appellants in this court.
In this court, that's true.
Now, isn't that the equivalent of conceding?
All right, Your Honor, then.
Or if not, correct me.
Well, all right. That interpretation, yes, sir, we're conceding it, but I hate to concede it because of the brief of the amicus in this case, Charles Keating, who argues that it is constitutional, and we will...
And another amicus argues that it is unconstitutional, and yet you say it's not an issue.
I do say it's not an issue, It wasn't an issue below.
That's one of the many reasons that caused me some not a little confusion in reading these briefs.
As a matter of fact, I think... This case, as I say, had gotten, there were so many different cases with so many different issues that this issue never really got squarely presented, I suppose, until it did get to the Fifth Circuit.
But it's not an issue.
It's not an issue here.
Now,
that's true, Your Honor.
Because, in effect, you do not question the holding that it's unconstitutional. Is that it?
I don't.
That's
what the brief says at this particular point. I'll say
now?
I may have been in error in making that statement because of the
animosity. Well, I'm confused now.
Well, I think that the court can correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you're presenting your case here, and I just wonder what case you have, what the issues are.
We will tell the court. I think this case could have been settled early on if Moore versus Sims had been decided. And we will suggest to the court, and I do suggest to the court, that if you apply Moore versus Sims, you can hold that the court below should not have taken this case at all.
Well, you don't make that argument in your brief.
No, Your Honor, I don't. This brief was written, of course, before Moore v. Sims, at least before it became brought to our consciousness. And it actually occurred to us when we passed the new obscenity statute which was contested in Texas, and then...
What court decided Moore versus Simmons?
This court, Your Honor. When? It is a...
What's the citation to it?
Oh, I don't know, Your Honor. It was decided in June.
I filed that case in Texas.
The one involving the juvenile statute.
That's true, Your Honor. And this court decided it on the principles of abstention, talking about Pullman abstention, and we would say that discussion in Moore versus Sims probably would have required the court below in this case to have dismissed all the cases and let the state courts construe its own statutes.
Well, it wasn't decided on
that's
Pullman
why,
abstention.
Your Honor, I don't want to concede 4666, even though I may have said so in
well,
the brief.
Well, it wasn't decided. I wrote the opinion. It wasn't decided on Pullman abstention at all. It was decided on the civil counterpart of Younger against Harris, dismissal abstention.
Well, Your Honor, if it was decided on that basis, and I'm sorry I misrepresented, Your Honor, to a couple of courts because I said that there was no reason to discuss Pullman if it didn't have some meaning in the case, because obviously Younger was present as far as the right. Pending case, state case is concerned. As I say, I probably argued that case incorrectly from what Your Honor has just said.
Mr. Wiener, I share Mr. Justice Stewart's confusion about your position. I want to be sure about one other thing.
All right.
I take it that the attorney's fee issue is not before us.
Well, we did mention it in our jurisdictional statement. We have not argued it in our briefs. I would hope that the court would consider that in deciding this case because we had these multiplicity of cases, we are going to have attorney's fees possibly levied against a county attorney who never did really anything in this particular situation, in this big mass of cases, but just suggest that maybe a lease should be canceled, or at least talk to a landlord, which then precipitated this case.
Well, it certainly isn't listed in your questions presented.
All right, Your Honor. Well, we will hope to resolve that issue below. But I would like to clear up some of the things that we have here. 4667 is involved, and that statute says that the habitual use of premises for a certain purpose will be enjoined. It says the use and not the property. That's why we were saying no prosecutor really tried to apply in the state of Texas 4666 and close a place for a year. The reason that they didn't is because there was, under the old obscenity statute, before it was amended some years ago, a Section 13 which permitted enjoining premises for obscene, the use of premises for obscene matters. And that did not permit closing. So when the obscenity statute was amended, and the injunction provisions were moved, no one, at least in the prosecution area that I know of, ever considered trying to padlock a theater for a year, which is provided for in 4666. It just didn't occur to them. Now, as far as the prior restraint, the other question in this case is whether an injunction can be drawn that enjoins the use of premises for the future showing of pictures which have not been judicially determined to be obscene. Where the injunction is drawn in explicit terms as far as the sexual conduct enjoined and also recites the requirements of Miller.
Okay. According to your brief, if not to your oral argument today, that's the only issue presented to us in this case.
Yes, sir.
The one you've just stated.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Now, do you agree with that? That's what your brief seemed to say to me.
That's what my brief said, Your Honor.
And you say that today?
I say that today. I will ask the court later to to set aside the decision below on the basis of Moore versus Sims so that I won't be caught by that position. Mm-hmm. But yes, my brief.
But on the merits, district court shouldn't have dismissed this case entirely, but was correct in considering the merits. On the merits,
that's my
single issue and the only issue.
Yes, sir.
Right. Thank you.
General Sweeney, you say that later today, though, you're going to argue another issue.
You're going to say
that under Moore against Sims, which, as Mr. Justice Rehnquist pointed out, was a case involving a pending state proceeding that Chandra Younger barred the federal court from proceeding under the court's holding. And here, the district court, as I understand it, expressly held Younger abstention did not apply because there was no pending state proceeding.
That's true.
Now, why are you going to ask us to do something different under Moore against Sims?
Well, in most of the cases, the consolidated cases, they were pending civil.
But not in this one.
Not in this one. And I was also going to ask it based on what I thought Moore versus Sims said about Pullman abstention. And I thought that was a basis of the Moore versus Sims holding, that where you had a state statute that was capable of constitutional construction by the state courts, the federal courts would give the state courts the opportunity to consider the statute and make those constitutional constructions. And I would...
Well, that is, as I understand, the doctrine of Pullman abstention, but it was not applied in Moore against Sims.
Well, I hate...
argued in this case, as I understand.
Well, I still had to... Until you have told me what you have told me, Your Honor, you do discuss the Pullman doctrine in Moore versus Sims.
It certainly is discussed in Moore against Sims. I did not recall it as being the main focus of the thing, though I'm sure it's cited in that case.
But let's talk about the procedures, which is criticized by the appellee, that are gone through in Texas to obtain an injunction. Mr. Frierson argues that a temporary restraining order can be obtained without notice. I would again refer the court to Article 16 of the old obscenity statute 527, which required notice. And again, in most situations, Mr. Frierson points to a situation in the case from Dallas where apparently there was not notice. I point to a case that came out of Austin and having the injunction issued in that case, which was a part of the consolidated cases, where the courts expressly said there will be no temporary restraining orders issued. There will have to be notice and a hearing before there will be any injunction in this type of case. I would say, Your Honor, because that notice is required, and I think that in most instances the Texas courts will provide it. Now, there is a hearing. Again, my opposite number, as far as counsel is concerned, disagree. I say at the hearing on the temporary injunction that the question of obscenity is considered and decided, and a temporary injunction cannot issue without that decision. And we cite in our brief Lott versus State and Richards versus State, and it's apparent in those cases that the question of obscenity was considered at the injunction hearing and also on appeal, which is another point that Mr. Graves and I differ.
Mr. Sweeney, what is the question of obscenity when you're talking about unknown films or books in the future? What can that question be?
What we do, well, of course, there has to be some use of the property, and that's
unknown,
really...
unidentified moving pictures or books in the future. How can you determine the question of their obscenity?
Well, I would say that we are not entitled to even seek an injunction unless...
No, my question was simply, what do you mean when you say that the question of obscenity is considered?
All right, well then, as far as the future use of the premises, again, the injunction does recite the specific, or should recite, the specific sexual acts that are prohibited and enjoined, and that those sexual acts...
I thought we were talking about books or movies.
We are.
Yeah.
And
not conduct.
No, sir. But the books or movies that contain this particular type of conduct, and that those sexual matters must be taken in the light of Miller. Now, let's suppose an injunction issues under those circumstances. A temporary injunction is appealable in Texas. And by the way, in Texas, as in the federal courts, the hearing on the temporary injunction is usually the trial. And very often, probably more often than not, attorneys agree that the temporary injunction and the permanent injunction hearing will be held at the same time. So the evidence is presented there, and for all practical purposes, that's the end of the case, because everybody's put on just about everything he has at that point. A temporary injunction is appealable in Texas. It's an expedited appeal. The record must be filed in 20 days. The court can consider it even without briefs in order to expedite consideration on appeal. So this kind of injunction does have that protection and expedited appeal. But here's where we come to, I guess, to me, the proposition that makes me wonder why we've come all this way, except it is a matter of principle, and I shouldn't have said what I said. I think this is important. But in Texas, when there is a contempt hearing, all right, we have an injunction against some premises for enjoining the showing of obscene movies. A complaint is filed saying that injunction has been violated. The complainant, who would ordinarily be the county or district attorney, must come into court and prove that the injunction has been violated, which means for any movie that he's shown or any book displayed in the bookstore, he has got to go through the same type of proof that he would if he defiled a criminal obscenity case.
Well, what is the burden of proof?
All right, the burden of proof probably in getting the injunction in Texas at this time would be preponderance of evidence.
No, I mean,
I would say
as
far as
what is the burden of proof when the issue is whether the injunction has been violated?
All right, I think in that situation, probably the test is a clear and convincing test. And
not beyond a reasonable doubt.
Not beyond a reasonable doubt.
So in that respect, if in no other, it differs from a criminal trial, right?
That's true, sir.
Well, you mean in trying criminal contempt?
Well,
I mean, if you issued this complaint, say there's been an outstanding injunction and there's a claim that it's been violated, and you issue a complaint, and is this for civil or criminal contempt?
I would say it's civil, but I cannot tell.
Well, if it's civil, of course there may not be.
Well, I postulate, the reason I said what I did is because the burden of proof has changed in Texas in the commitment of the mentally of persons that are. And
well, I don't think that's involved here, but what?
Well, we can send the person to jail, so I think the courts would.
Well, you might send him to jail until he
purges himself.
Well, but if you don't suggest that Texas is convicting people of criminal contempt for a certain term in jail on proof less than beyond a reasonable doubt.
He just did.
Well, he didn't. He said he didn't know whether that was civil or criminal.
I can't tell from the law of Texas. My guess is a Texas court would hold, in this kind of situation, since a jail term is involved, again looking to the cases where persons have been committed to mental institutions, that probably a Texas court, in all fairness, would use the clear and convincing test.
Would the defendant have a right, if he wanted one, to a jury trial?
I doubt it.
So
I doubt it. And I'll tell you why I'm confused. I can't tell you what the law of Texas is in this case. I've had law clerks.
Yeah.
The courts of Texas have never told me what criminal and civil contempt is. I don't know what the burden of proof is, and I have to confess it to the court.
Mm-hmm.
If I could, it would have been a brief.
You said he might get, in any event, in whatever the proceeding is, civil or criminal, he'd get a jail term?
He could be confined to jail until he purges himself.
How much of a jail term?
Until he purges himself. That's permissible. There's also a statute that sets a fine.
He's violated. How does he purge himself?
He purges himself by not showing this particular movie or taking that particular magazine off the shelves.
Well, that sounds like civil contempt.
I think it probably
would. In effect, hold the key to the jailhouse door in your pocket?
Right.
Yeah, but he already has, by definition, according to the state, violated the injunction. How can he unring a bell? How can he purge himself?
Well,
he hasn't violated the injunction until it's proved that he's shown an obscene movie.
That's true.
And that's what, and so that the trial, the issue on whether he's committed contempt would be determined by deciding whether he's shown an obscene movie.
That's true.
Within the meaning of Miller.
And you're,
and now if it's decided that he has, what's the punishment?
I would say that he quit showing the movie. I would analyze this in terms of what happens in child cases where the husband does not pay for child care. He's already violated the statute, and yet when he pays, he gets out of jail. I'm not sure that there's any difference. That's the best I could do.
Well, what if someone is convicted for second-degree murder in Texas and sentenced, let's assume the statute permits the imposition of the sentence by the jury of 20 years. Now, does the standard of proof for conviction of a clearly defined crime in Texas require that it be beyond a reasonable doubt?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And
General Zwinger, I know there are a lot of unanswered questions of how this statute would be construed, but am I correct in assuming this much, that in determining whether there's a nuisance under this statute, the sole inquiry of the court would be as to the content of the motion pictures or books that were alleged to be obscene, and there would be no consideration of the character of the neighborhood or the location of the theater or anything like that?
That's correct, sir. That's correct. What we are saying that 4667 imposes no more burden, threat to free speech than does a penal statute that prescribes obscenity. I think that's the bottom line. And I was at this particular... I do invite the court's attention to the brief filed by Amicus Charles Keating, in which he argues that under general common law principles, 4666 would be constitutional, and he cites Art Theaters Guild versus Ewing, I believe it's an Ohio case, cited in his brief as authority for this court's approval of a closure statute. And as I would have closed, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, with Moore versus Sims, but...
I've sent for Moore versus Sims, and I was too critical of your analysis of it. There is a good deal of reference in it to the Pullman abstention doctrine, and I think I owe my apology to you for that.
Well, thank you, Your Honor, but I do think that if Moore versus Sims does not extend Pullman to this type of situation, that this court should give consideration where there's a state statute that's capable of constitutional construction by the state courts, then an extension of Pullman would seem dictated or at least desirable. It would save the time of the federal courts. It would give the state courts a chance to construe their own statutes, and the Texas courts have accepted the invitation of this court in Miller to construe their statutes in conformity with this court's opinion. Thank you.
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Mr. Zwinger mentions prior restraint. I would like to state to the court some reasons why I believe this statute shows that it is an impermissible prior restraint.
Why is this a prior restraint? Is it your contention that the issuance of the injunction or the passage of the statute is a prior restraint?
The issuance of the injunction against unnamed future films, which subjects the motion picture operator or otherwise to the various types of either somebody looking over his shoulders, the judge acting as a censor, the unlimited discretion of the trial judge in issuing that injunction, the broad language that's permissible in the injunction, it is doing for the future what in Near Minnesota, Near versus Minnesota, applied to a newspaper, say shouldn't be done. And now they're attempting to expand that to say, because there has been shown an obscene motion picture and we come in and get a single judge on a preponderance of the proof to issue an injunction, and the judge therefore sets out the broad language of what he might consider to be obscene, in that future, then it becomes a prior restraint because we have that facing the books
saying,
to operate.
What you're saying is that the nuisance route,
yes, sir,
that was applied to many different kinds of establishment, including illegal liquor establishments, cannot be used in the First Amendment field.
Yes, sir, in the First Amendment field, because
even though from time to time opinions of various courts have suggested that that was the best way to deal with obscenity.
Your Honor, the only limited exception that I believe this court has really looked at is the model statute of Kingsley Books versus Brown, in which there was a movie brought before, or a book brought before the court. That particular book was enjoined, and then if there was any violation in the future, then the person could be punished. And even in that decision, the court said, well, it's possible that even while we are waiting to try the obscenity finally on the merits, New York might not even punish for contempt if they continued the sale of the book during that period of time. But to extend this doctrine, and I know the court has said maybe the best possible notice of whether or not a motion picture is obscene would be to have a civil injunction against it, and then if there was a further exhibition of the motion picture, you would know.
That would be a particular motion picture.
That's the particular motion picture, just like.
Not just motion pictures like the bad ones.
That's right.
That had previously been identified.
That's right, sir, because in this case you have the judge says in his unlimited discretion, and in the case that the state cites of Richards versus State, the court there says it was unwilling to assume that the state must bring suit each time the defendants change the obscene menu in their passion pits, and that they didn't want to tie the hands of the chancellor. Well, in this particular case, the broad language, the case that the state of Texas cites as the good example of what the specific conduct should be, they mentioned they shouldn't have what is defined in the code as sexual intercourse, deviant sexual intercourse, or bestiality, and then the injunction says, or you're permanently enjoined from showing any motion pictures or magazines, or selling those, or other materials which contain representations or descriptions of ultimate sex acts, normal or perverted, actual or simulated. So you have an injunction that the court says is, if you have a description in the book of a simulated sex act, or if you have a description or depiction in a movie, then if it violates the term of the obscenity law, you can be punished for contempt of court.
Well, why isn't the obscenity law then a prior restraint rather than the injunction?
Well, the obscenity law faces everyone who may or may not want to distribute. But when you have
an
injunction, the criminal law, but when you have an injunction that says, not only will we determine whether you have violated the injunction, but we'll also subject you to 6 months in jail, which is the penalty in Texas for criminal contempt, that's it. But you don't have what you're entitled to in a criminal trial. It hadn't gone through the hands of a criminal complaint, a grand jury proceeding, all your protection that you have. And what you have in this statute, which is beyond the criminal, is that this statute allows a private individual without injury to bring the suit for injunction.
Well, you say the nuisance route that has been occasionally referred to in opinions of this court is then actually a worse one from the point of view of the defendant than an outright criminal prosecution under an obscenity statute, since the defendant in the nuisance route doesn't have the safeguards of the criminal procedure.
No, sir, I'm not saying that for a civil injunction against the showing of a particular movie in existence which brought before the court, and there's notice and a hearing on that movie, and if there's an injunction on it, then only in the future if you disobey that injunction by showing that particular movie. But when you have here an injunction that says, just as the criminal statute, if you happen to show any particular material that has a simulated sex act in it, you can be brought back for the court before a contempt action in this, then that's going beyond what is the limited exemption, a limited exception that you've looked at for civil injunctions in Kingsley Books versus Brown or other model.
And time film involves.
Yes, sir.
A specific identified and named.
That's right. This is against unidentified, unnamed films that are magazines or books that are not even in existence.
Isn't it true, though, before you could be held in contempt, that the movie that it is claimed violates the injunction would have to be found to be obscene?
Not necessarily so, sir. And I say this because...
Let's assume your colleague disagrees with you on that. Let's assume that you're wrong on that and that before you could be held in contempt, you'd have to have the same kind of finding you would have to have under the statute, the same kind of a determination of obscenity that you would have to have under the statute. Would you still claim?
You would have if they were trying the movie, but you could also be convicted of contempt if you failed to produce the movie. If the court said, I issue a show cause order, you are arrested under the procedures permissible in Texas. You are arrested, not just a citation for show cause. You're put in jail, you're brought into court, and you fail to produce the motion picture. And the court says, bring the motion picture into court because I want to see it and rule whether or not you're in contempt. And you say, I'm not going to bring the motion picture. You violated the injunction. You may have been served with the injunction, and you don't take the film off of the screen right then and there.
Let's assume he does bring the film, and there are no issue like that in the contempt proceeding. Before he can be held in contempt, there will have to be a determination of obscenity of the film that he showed.
You would have to be, but you're not entitled to all the procedures you would be if you were a criminal trial.
Yes, if there's a criminal trial.
That's right. But the real problem with that is you ignore that An injunction action could be brought before a single judge that the district attorney or the city attorney, the county attorney picks out. That judge says, and he writes a very broad injunction, and so a 7-Eleven store, a department store, the people that are the booksellers association here, they say, we're not going to take that book
and display it anymore. As you read that injunction, and I gather what you were reading to us was from an injunction.
That's from the injunction in the State versus Stimball
case. As you read that appears as if a violation of a future exhibition of a film could be based upon, and a finding of guilt could be based upon, as you read it to us, an isolated excerpt from the film without judging the obscenity of the film as a whole, which is the test of obscenity.
Your Honor, in the Richards case and in the Locke case, which says, am I right? You're right, sir, because the state of Texas, while they do, the injunction says, though taken as a whole, but the Locke versus State and the Richards case says to state that sexual intercourse in a film, that's obviously obscene.
Even though it's just an isolated incident?
Even though it's an isolated incident. And Your Honor, that's the problem, that it can go beyond to do this in the fact of what is done. There's an appeal now in the Fifth Circuit of a civil injunction against an issue of Penthouse magazine. You'll find that when a private citizen can bring an injunction suit to say that this particular magazine is obscene, find a judge that can do it, there is a broad general injunction for every unnamed future publication, and petition after petition for contempt can be brought, and it will get the courts into what this court didn't want it to be, is a nationwide censor, in that the judge becomes just like the administrative censor. In fact, in the Locke versus State case, where there was another problem, which was an agreed order of procedure, and the agreed order of procedure was that if a motel operator had a film that he wanted to show and thought it was a borderline, he would take it down to the court to ask for a ruling, not that, or risk contempt. And when you've got that, then the judge could be faced with magazines, motion picture film, books, anything like that. And we're not talking about just explicit sexual movies. We're, if you may be relitigating Lady Chatterley's Lover, because that has descriptions of it. As opposed to that, while that might have serious value, you would say, well, something that goes along with opposed to that, the Happy Hooker, then that has the description of it, and some bookstore says, I don't want to do that because I may be facing an original injunction, and then I have the duty to look into each and every book that I want. Now, we always know that there are some people that are going to take the chance that they're not going to be caught, they're not going to be prosecuted, they're not otherwise do it, and they're going to take that chance under the criminal law. And when we have always thought that in the First Amendment, that it's either that or in crimes that you look at both either punishment or education to determine whether or not you would do this, and that the First Amendment, you were entitled to a broader protection on prior restraint, and that was the purpose of it, to stop it. Let the man have the subsequent punishment. Now, this contempt action is not just subsequent punishment. Not only don't you have all of the things of criminal procedures, but you can say, a petition is brought that a man showed the motion picture a month ago, and now he's charged with contempt. It's ridiculous to say that every action will always be civil contempt, and I have the keys to the jail because I stopped showing the motion picture. It's been shown a month ago.
Well, what if following the Heller approach that this court, in the case this court decided along with the Miller cases, a law enforcement officer goes, views a film, files an affidavit, presents it to a magistrate, and the magistrate issues a search warrant for the seizure of the film, of one copy of the film. The law enforcement officer goes out and tries to seize one copy of the film, and the owner of the film says, I'm simply not going to turn it over to you. I'm protected by the First Amendment. Do you think that he can't be tried for contempt?
I think he would be in violation of the court of failing to, the first thing, I think the officer would just go in and physically take the film because he'd been authorized.
So supposing he stood in the door and said, you're not coming in here.
Well, I think he'd be arrested and physically taken away, and they'd go take the film on the basis of the search warrant. But in this case, if you approach it under the civil injunction statute, that I have an injunction against me, and if you go out there and show me a show cause order, under HELA, I can continue, even with a criminal charge, to show the motion picture because I believe the jury will find me not guilty. Under this case, if I continue to show the motion picture, the judge can say, I told you you're in an injunction and you're both civil and criminal because it's past actions of showing it and future you can't show this unnamed picture now identified anymore. So you've gone even beyond Heller by saying not only you seize the film but you have that particular injunction. I just believe that when we're talking about the First Amendment and the idea that the First Amendment's chief purpose is to not have a prior restraint, and that you would try to say that you wouldn't, that the least tolerated and the most serious type of provision under the First Amendment is to try to identify this in the past. The contempt, the injunction, becomes just the same thing as a criminal statute. It is sitting there. But you have that official sanction of someone looking over your particular shoulder every time with that particular judge being a censor for something that is so loose in identification. Because we still have, in Smith versus U.S., we still said it was a real fact question as to whether or not the material appealed to the purient interest or was patently offensive according to the contemporary standards of the community.
You have somebody looking over your shoulder under a perfectly valid statute under Paris Adult Theater and Miller. If it, depending on whether a jury were to define whether or not it met the tests laid down by that statute, don't you?
Yes, sir, but you have the normal checks and balance of a government as to whether or not there will be a criminal indictment or a possible grand jury hearing on it, with the other criminal procedures that are adopted to you, as opposed to the fact that, just like in McKinley versus Alabama, some people won't want to challenge the fact when they have an injunction, whereas if they're distributing a magazine or a book or a motion picture which has some isolated incident of sex act in it, that are they going to say that this freezes, it doesn't just chill, it freezes provisions and becomes what I believe is an impermissible prior restraint in that action, sir. The contempt action, this also is really self-censorship, because the person must look at each and everything when he's under an injunction. In a criminal prosecution, if a bookstore operator receives a book, a written book, and he doesn't read it completely, and he's not in the adult business where it screams, he's in a zoned area like American Mini Theater versus Young, but he's having it there. He's had an injunction issued against him. Does he review each and every book and then make that determination himself as to what must be done in this when he is not and he's on the borderline?
What about the proprietor of an adult film theater which shows sexually explicit films?
This particular case, Your Honor, involved the original case, Universal Theater versus Amusements versus Vance, involved Deep Throat. It was tried twice in Houston, Texas. There were mistrials both times. When we were having the hearing of this case, the prosecution dismissed the indictment against Deep Throat, and that case was settled, and leaving these other pending 20 cases.
So we really don't know then as to the content of any particular case, except to say that when you have a criminal obscenity statute, the proprietor of an adult film theater does have to use some judgment in interpreting that law, or at least consult his lawyer.
But he also has a very uneven application of the law, because some juries determine that it's not obscene, and some juries say that particular films with explicit sex acts are obscene. And that has to be that particular person's judgment as to whether he goes over the borderline, with a jury to determine it, as opposed to the time when you have an injunction here that goes back before a single judge that says, in my mind, any act, any motion picture which shows a sex act, actual or simulated, I also believe appeals to the purient interest in others, and you're convicted of contempt, or you're guilty of civil contempt for this unknown motion picture that you have now presented. And it's the main reason is the unnamed future publication in which there is that restraint upon the individual.
Have there been any contempt proceedings for violations of injunctions of this kind?
Yes, sir. In the state of Tennessee, there was.
No, I mean in Texas.
In Texas, I don't believe in Texas, because this statute was passed in 74. There were some proceedings pending at that time, so that this became involved in the declaratory relief at that time in there. So
in other words, this lawsuit has held everything up?
Well, there have been other injunctions, such as in Dallas and in Austin, Texas, but I don't know if there have been any contempt proceedings involved in this. But
well,
I think...
What do you think is the form of the contempt proceeding and contemplated by this statute, civil or criminal?
I think it's both, sir. I think it's both. Because if you... first place, if you have the magazine or if you have the motion picture at the time, then the court is going to say, stop showing it, or you're in civil contempt, stay in jail until you do stop showing it.
Well, but I thought you said that the court doesn't say just stop showing this picture, but stop showing any picture like this.
That's the general injunction. But if you're cited for contempt because you showed a picture like it in the future, and you still have the picture, it'd be civil contempt, you're going to stay in jail until you stop showing it, or...
But only after a determination that you violated the injunction.
Only after a determination that you violated the injunction, except, Your Honor, you're not going to come, you're not going to be filed with a show cause order and immediately come into court. You're going to have a few days to prepare. And if you continue to show it at that time, then you then
what if the temporary
injunction could be.
Let's assume that in some other context there's a perfectly valid injunction, an injunction that you would concede was validly issued and is substantively acceptable. And then there's a an order to show cause why the fellow subject to the injunction shouldn't be held in criminal contempt. And there's a, he's given notice and there's going to be a hearing. Is there a Texas rule about what the standard of proof is before you can find somebody guilty of criminal contempt and put him in jail for a term certain?
The cases I read in Texas, Your Honor, and the ones I cited in my brief, I would think it would have to be beyond a reasonable doubt on the criminal part, but the civil part, of course,
like any other civil contempt.
Yes, sir. Now they do have divorce hearings where they're saying we're giving you criminal contempt and put you in jail, but I would think that if you had somebody obnoxious odors or running house of prostitution or liquor.
Well, insofar as it's criminal contempt, is there or is there not in Texas practice a jury provided?
No, sir. The punishment is 6 months, and so you do not have to have a jury trial.
That is under this statute.
That's right, sir.
But if there were
if it were beyond six months,
then there would be a jury trial.
Yes, sir.
And what is it? 12 men or 6 men? What is it?
I'm not. I don't generally practice in Texas in this, sir, so I can't answer. Mm-hmm.
Do you agree, Mr. Graves, before you sit down, that Article 4666 is not involved?
I agree. I agree that the court down there said that it wasn't involved, but if it was, it was unconstitutional. And since it was conceded in the brief, I did not raise that issue. I know it was brought up by the amicus, but I think it's so clearly unconstitutional.
But in your view, it's not an issue before.
It's not an issue in this court. Thank you.
Do you have anything further?
If just a minute, Your Honor, I would still repeat that the Texas injunction statute has no more chilling effect on First Amendment rights than does the Texas or any other criminal obscenity statute.
Well, what does it? Why then do you need it if it's the equivalent of the Texas criminal law?
I'm not sure that we do, to be frank. But
I would if, because. What does it add to the criminal law? It changes the burden of proof. It deprives the person of a jury trial, doesn't it?
I don't think it adds anything.
Well,
as a matter of fact, I think it's
proof.
A cumbersome process, and I don't know that the prosecutors, after one or two rounds with it, will ever use it again. However, I would say that the cause that Mr. Graves has imagined with respect to some of the situations that could happen in these kind of injunction proceedings and what the consequences might be, again, suggests to me Vora versus Sims. He's got a far-ranging, broad-based attack. Most of these problems would have probably been settled by the Texas courts if they'd have had the opportunity 4 years ago to worry about some of the things that we're worrying here. And I do suggest that Vora versus Sims might be a solution. If not, I suggest that this statute should be held to be constitutional.
Under the Texas statute, even disregarding 4666, but with a finding of habitual use and a declaration of public nuisance under 4667, in your view, would the trial court have the authority as a matter of discretion to say the proper remedy here is to close the theater?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in C-Train Shipbuilding.